Welcome to Much Ado About Wrestling. This is the show that teaches you how to appreciate the theatrical world of professional wrestling. Tyler, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Andrew. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing fine. I'm getting ready for Thanksgiving, trying to settle my plans.
Thanksgiving? I'm getting ready for Survivor Series, man.
Well, that's a Thanksgiving like tradition. So
that's true.
I was saying I'm getting ready for my Thanksgiving plans, that was part of it.
Do you watch Survivor Series with the fam? Is this a family event in the Kaeberline household?
No, I think if I was like, hey family, let's watch Survivor Series, they would be like, is the show with Jeff Probst? And I'd be like, nope, that's not what I mean. So if you're listening to this show, this episode right now, it probably means that we've become a really big hit and you've listened to all the episodes and you've gone back to this one. That would be my guess. This is what some people in like the business world would call a soft launch. Mm. Does that mean is this canon in the like mythology of our history, Tyler?
We're going to say yes. We're going to say yes.
So any characters that die in this episode, they're dead.
Any characters that get future endeavored in this episode.
Oh, that could be bad. Are you going to future endeavor me in this? That'd be a tough way to
start
the show. Maybe
not yet. We'll see if you get over or not.
Yeah. Those terms might have been really confusing for some of you if you're a first-time listener. That's okay. That's what the point of this show is to teach you how to appreciate wrestling. We're going to teach you all the lingo. All of our normal episodes will include some vocabulary words, as well as like histories and ways to appreciate wrestling. But this is not a normal episode, is it, Tyler?
It is not. We are going to be reviewing, kind of giving you a synopsis of what we mentioned earlier, Survivor Series, coming up this Sunday. It's going to be pretty big. They have a really big card that has changed drastically over just the last like week or two. So
good thing we didn't do this in advance.
Yeah, we're gonna kind of break it down for you and just so you can understand it a little better.
Yeah. So Survivor Series is the name of this show, and the show is a pay-per-view, which means that in theory you have to pay to view it. Tyler, do you want to explain to the newbies out there what a pay-per-view is?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, the simplest term, yes, you pay per view. But so pay-per-view was a service that they started, I believe it was like in the 60s or 70s, where television networks basically they would allow people to the opportunity to pay for specific syndicated programs at a specific time that they could watch. Some of the most like popular ones, like one of the big introduction to pay-per-view for boxing was the Thrilla in Manila fight with Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier.
Not with Michael Jackson. One. Yeah.
Not that one.
Wrong Thriller. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was like one of the big pay-per-views back in the 70s when that one ran. In terms of wrestling, they've done it for a while. The very first, the very first wrestling pay-per-view event was actually in 1985, the Wrestling Classic.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have run many pay-per-views throughout the year since then. Different promotions, WCW, ECW, TNA have all run pay-per-views and things like that.
Yeah, it's kind of a calling card. If you're a wrestling promotion and you're just like on regional TV, if you announce like, hey, we have pay-per-view now, that is like your arrival, your step up to trying to be in a different class of business operations.
It gets a little weird today just with the introduction of like Netflix with streaming services, how the WWE has the WWE Network and everything, so they run their quote-unquote pay-per-views on this streaming service. You're not paying for the view of that particular event, but the term itself is kind of just stuck to what these events are called, since that's what they were previously before the existence of the network.
Yeah, it's already an archaic term.
It's like
if when we're editing this podcast later and be like, I'm cutting tape. I'm not actually cutting tape anymore. It's all digital. Yeah. So the first, was Wrestling Classic from WWF at the time?
Yes, WWF at the time. Okay. It was in 1985. Mm-hmm.
So that's a good tidbit, because I assumed that the first pay-per-view was WrestleMania, which I guess is probably the second one that they did.
That makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah. So for a long time, the pay-per-view was a thing that the big promotion did just once or twice a year. Survivor Series in particular is one of the big four pay-per-views. This is actually the second one. To give you an idea of how infrequent they were, the first Survivor Series in 1987 was after WrestleMania III. So it was after already 3 years of just running one pay-per-view that you would build to the whole year. This was the second one, and then there became four big ones, the other two being the Royal Rumble and SummerSlam. And now we have more than one a month, which is
more than one a month. It is so much wrestling, but
yeah,
since we love wrestling, it's pretty great.
And how is a pay-per-view different, other than the cost to view it? How is it different from a weekly television show?
So ideally, the point of the pay-per-view is really to either have major points to build upon stories, or it's the point where you're going to end stories. So for storylines in wrestling, you know, you have two superstars who have been feuding for a while. Typically it always comes to a point at the pay-per-view because that's your selling point. If you have two guys or girls, of course, wrestling who have been feuding for months and months, and, you know, it's getting really heated, people want to see the end of it. And so if you schedule it for a pay-per-view, you're going to get a lot of buys for that. Lots of people are going to pay to see the culmination of this feud that's been building. So that's the main point, has always been have these culminations of these storylines that we've been building for months at a time, things like that. But of course, there's always just the you want to have just kind of ticket draws, of course. So you might throw in a random dream match here or there that somebody would want to see that you know is going to sell some tickets or something like that.
If you think about the Mayweather McGregor fight recently, there's a reason why in boxing and in MMA, in similar like wrestling adjacent pay-per-views, they do the weigh-ins and the press conferences where they always end up getting in a skirmish. I'm sorry to let you guys know that that's not real. Like, they absolutely do that. The idea
don't break
is you,
kayfabe.
Yeah, the idea is that you have them box a little or fight a little so that you and you love that content so much. You're like, oh my gosh, I'm willing to pay however much money they charged for that fight. I think it was like $80. You're willing to pay whatever it is because you need to see these guys hit each other. Another way to think about it, in less in like a fight oriented way, is that a pay-per-view in wrestling, if it functions well, it should be like the season finale of a television show. Is that fair to say, you think?
I think so.
Except if a season finale was once a month, or now sometimes more than once a month. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good comparison. The season finale, again, it's the culmination of this storyline you've been building up. And sometimes, you know, it's the culmination. It could be the start of your next storyline or something like that, which I think specifically to wrestling, that's one of the great things about this medium is that it's never ending. It's always continuing. So any end point you can then use as your beginning point to your next story and just carry it straight on.
Yeah, and I think this particular pay-per-view probably will be the beginning of some stories that will eventually end at WrestleMania. But
absolutely,
first,
yeah,
to tell you a bit about Survivor Series, the first one was in 1987. It's been running every year since. This one tomorrow is going to be the 31st edition of Survivor Series, which makes me feel old.
Wow, 31. Whew.
Yeah, yeah. To give you an idea of the traditions of this pay-per-view, it's always around Thanksgiving. It's been on Thanksgiving before and on Thanksgiving Eve. Now it's traditionally the Sunday before Thanksgiving. The thing that it's notable for, most notable for, is the traditional Survivor Series match, which is a pretty boring name for it. But what that is essentially two teams of four or five wrestlers facing off against each other, eliminating wrestlers as the match goes on until there's only one team left with quote-unquote survivors. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this one's going to take place in Houston, Texas. It's going to stream live at 8 p.m. tomorrow on the WWE Network. That's 8 p.m. Eastern time. And this year,
only $9.99 a month.
Yeah, only $9.99 a month. This year, the overall story, the overarching story, is that it's Raw versus SmackDown, since we have brand-exclusive wrestlers now. Do you have a favorite Survivor Series moment? Is this one of the pay-per-views you would always pencil in and be like, Mom and Dad, this is the one that I want to buy?
So, actually, no. I've Survivor Series is fine. Like, I enjoy the concept. It's never been my favorite pay-per-view. It's never been my favorite of the big four. I think the Rumble always holds a special place in my heart just for, you know, some of the surprises and things you can see. But, I mean, I still do enjoy Survivor Series. There's definitely been, I mean, some amazing moments. I mean, not me personally, but I mean, a lot of friends and people I know who do enjoy wrestling, they would say there's some Survivor Series that, you know, some of the best pay-per-views of all time they've ever seen. Survivor Series 98, Mankind versus The Rock, like some people say that's one of the best pay-per-views ever done. So, I mean, I don't know if I personally have like a favorite one. I mean, I'd probably just have to say Survivor Series 97, the Montreal Screwjob. Just because, you know, I mean, just the weight that it carries in itself. So
that's the most infamous one.
Big things happen at Survivor Series.
The Undertaker debuted at a Survivor Series.
Undertaker debuted. That's true.
It's traditionally a place where you can debut a lot of new wrestlers, although I don't think that will happen this year because you have so many of these matches that are 5-on-5 that you got to fill out. Yeah.
Who could they possibly debut? Like.
If the Bullet Club the just enters themselves into one of the Survivor Series matches,
Are we gonna see Ricochet show up? Or?
Oh, maybe that would be really cool. Yes.
But
it would be on the pre-show, unfortunately. But we're getting further away from the point. So this one is all about Raw versus SmackDown to a degree because you know, half of the wrestlers are contracted to Raw, half of them are contracted to SmackDown. And if you've watched anything the past month, I guarantee you've heard one of the announcers say that this is one of the only times of the year that wrestlers from Raw will face wrestlers from SmackDown. If you think about it like baseball, this is the All-Star game in a way because it's like the National League people versus the American League people. You get to see matchups that you don't normally get to see. Although the big thing about the MLB All-Star game is that, like most All-Star games, people started to find it kind of pointless. So they made it where if you won the MLB All-Star game, which if it was the American League that won, then the American League champions would get home field advantage in the World Series and vice versa. A lot of the matches on the card tonight, Tyler, don't have any title implications, don't have there's not a lot that people are fighting for.
One of the selling points they've wanted to do with this one, and it's mostly because of the brand split with the Raw versus SmackDown thing, is that they're having a lot of champions versus champion match. So like Raw's respective Intercontinental champion is going to face SmackDown's United States champion because they're on that kind of same
equal level.
Yeah. Exactly. But the championships themselves aren't up for grabs. So it's not really a like they're going to take the other person's belt or something. It's more kind of bragging rights.
Which was the name of a previous pay-per-view.
Yeah. You are not wrong.
Started to run right before Survivor Series, which is weird because they both kind of had these team mentalities. So I think that's why bragging rights doesn't exist anymore. What would you do? Now I'm thinking about the quote-unquote main event. I'm not sure that it will be the match that goes on last, but the Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. This is the fight to see which show is better, and it's all the bigger stars in that match. But the winner doesn't get anything right now except for bragging rights. Is there something that you might add to it if you were the one writing to make it feel a bit more substantial or a bit more impactful later down the line?
So I mean, I think the difficult thing with this with the Survivor Series elimination match for this pay-per-view, I think it's purely going to be used to set up everything for WrestleMania. So if you look at some of the people you have on the team, Triple H was just added to the Raw team last week, and he's been running that thing with Kurt Angle and the Jason Jordan storyline. So obviously the two of them, obviously Triple H being added is going to somehow play into that storyline, whether it be him versus Kurt Angle at WrestleMania, Kurt Angle versus Jason Jordan at WrestleMania, something along that line. Then with Shane McMahon being the captain of Team SmackDown, that going into him, like, quote-unquote facing off against his sister Stephanie, who's the GM of Raw. Like, I think it's mostly just used to set up the storylines for WrestleMania. So in terms of what they could do to give it a little more stakes, I don't know. Because, like, I mean, my first thought is, you know, winner maybe is guaranteed the main event of WrestleMania. But that's the whole point of the Royal Rumble is winner.
Yeah, it devalues the Royal Rumble.
Exactly, yeah. And obviously, since I already said, like, I definitely prefer the Rumble to Survivor Series, I would not want them to do that because I don't want them to devalue that Royal Rumble win. It's tough to think of what the winners are going to get out of this besides bragging rights. I mean, I don't know. Do you have any ideas that you could throw
on it? I've heard people throwing around some kind of variant of the winning team gets the number 30 entrant to the Royal Rumble.
That's not bad.
Yeah, and then that allows you to do some storytelling where it's like, you know, if let's say there's three survivors on the winning team, well, then they got to have a match to see which one of them is going to be number 30. And you could do, consequently, to really hurt the losing team, you can be like, one of the five of them has to be entering number one. That might take away from some of the surprise and fun of the Rumble, but there's a lot of spots in the Rumble to write around. So I don't think it would hurt it. It would at least give a bit more stakes to the pay-per-view, because there is a lingering feeling, even though I think this could be an amazing show, that tomorrow who won and lost might not matter that much, which is bad.
Yeah, I think, see, they do so well of the lead up to Survivor Series, having this idea of brand loyalty, and where the SmackDown superstars, regardless of what, you know, feuds they might have been in or something like that, they can set those aside and all kind of rally behind this, like, we're all Team SmackDown and we have to face Team Raw, and the vice versa, of course, with the Raw superstars. So they do really well of setting that up. My only worry, not worry really, but the only thing with that is I feel like once Survivor Series is done, once that pay-per-view closes, they kind of drop that mentality, and then they just kind of pick up the storylines that they had before that, just kind of where they left off. Like, they're just going to put a soft pause on it till this whole Survivor Series
kind of like a soft launch. Yeah.
And then that soft launch on it, you know, get it right back into it. So it's tough. Like, it almost devalues, like, the point of it, but at the same time you enjoy it while it's happening.
Yeah. And I do think this actually will be a really enjoyable pay-per-view while it's happening, which I should put out some ground rules, cause I have some stuff I want to say about weaving in some meaning into that main event, but we should start our clock. And what that means is a lot of these, like, review and preview shows for wrestling podcasts can get way too long. So what we're going to do is we're looking at the cards, both of us. There's 8 matches. We're going to put 30 minutes on the clock, and we're going to try and go through as many of the matches as we can, talking about what is the story, why we're excited for it, what might happen. And once that 30-minute timer hits, that's it. We're done. If we don't get to everything, then it's apologies to whichever matches we didn't get to. So I'm going to set up that clock now and hit start. So 30 minutes on the clock going now. We've already talked about it a bit, the Team Raw versus Team SmackDown. To be more specific, this is Team Raw's general manager, Kurt Angle, with Braun Strowman, Finn Balor, Samoa Joe, and Triple H, versus Team SmackDown with their general manager, Shane McMahon, Randy Orton, Bobby Roode, Shinsuke Nakamura, and John Cena. You were talking, Tyler, a bit about the loyalties will go away maybe tomorrow. Something that I'm hoping, and this is a bit of a prediction, is that the two people who have been the most outspoken against SmackDown while still being on SmackDown, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, they are not on the pay-per-view anywhere. And I'm kind of hoping that they will get involved in this main event somehow and really further a storyline against the upper echelon of SmackDown brass, if you will. But that would mean that maybe Shane can't feud with Kurt, or Shane can't feud with Triple H or Stephanie. What's most interesting about this match to me is that there are a lot of different perceived ways that this story can go, and they really have not tipped us off as to which way it will go.
I mean, I definitely had KO and Sammy on my radar for possibly getting involved in this match in some way. I would like to see them show up and attempt to sabotage SmackDown. I think that could be a really interesting storyline. I don't know. So it my only worry with this is that them doing this is going to lead to some sort of WrestleMania match with either KO or Sammy and Shane, and not to devalue Shane McMahon as a wrestler, but I have already seen his quota of matches for 2017, and quite frankly, I don't want to see him. I'm trying to think of a fair way to say this, because I want to remain positive. I want to remain positive on this podcast. So I feel that KO and Sammy would be much better served, much better utilized at WrestleMania against someone that is not Shane McMahon. So that would be my only worry of them getting involved in this match is going to lead to that conclusion.
Yeah. I'm kind of hoping for them to get aligned with Triple H somewhere in this match. Wrestling likes to forget its most recent storylines sometimes, but there's a real opportunity here to tell a very prolonged story with Sammy and Kevin Owens both being Triple H guys in NXT, being brought up, being underutilized by a different McMahon, and maybe you can do a new version of the Authority with the four of them. They could be like the Raw sleeper cells invading SmackDown. And you can see a reflection of a moment from a few years ago now, 2 years ago now, when Triple H allowed Kevin Owens to win a title, is maybe we will see that kind of flipped in this. But there's so many storylines potentially within these 10 people. And then you think of the people who aren't officially in the match with Kevin and Sammy, with Stephanie, with Daniel Bryan, and with Jinder Mahal, who is also no longer on this card. you would imagine he's got to show up. Do you think it's more likely that he shows up in this match or in the next match that we should transition to champion versus champion, Brock Lesnar versus AJ Styles?
I think if we're going to see Jinder Mahal, it's definitely going to be in Lesnar versus Styles. Mm-hmm. Now, the idea with that is, just backtracking, the main event, I think this is actually going to be in the main event. I think it's going to go on after the elimination match. Mm-hmm. It's going to be Brock Lesnar, the Universal Champion, versus AJ Styles, the newly crowned WWE champion. And I could definitely see Jinder making an appearance in this match, but I don't necessarily see him trying to, like, attack AJ. I could see him attacking Brock. Because if you look at the storyline for this match, I mean, Brock already has the advantage. AJ's easily the underdog going into this. Brock has the size advantage. Brock has the established champion advantage. Like, he's been champion since WrestleMania last year. So, I mean,
yeah, to give you a comparison, this is almost like David versus Goliath in the sense that Brock Lesnar is a big, unbeatable monster, and AJ Styles is a well-respected, technically skilled, but fast and small wrestler. Yeah. This is a classic size versus speed kind of fight, where Brock wins all of his matches in 5 minutes, and AJ would wrestle an hour if he could. Yeah. So it's going to be I think the story they're going to tell in the ring is going to be who can dictate the pace of the match.
Yeah, but I can see this match going I don't want to say it's going to be even, because I can see them getting in there, you know, Brock hits one German suplex, and then it's just, you know, cut and paste Brock beatdown from that point. But I could see Jinder making an appearance and trying to attack Brock, like maybe the Singh brothers distract the ref, he gets a Kolosov or something. Because there was that build, I mean, before they decided to put the title on AJ, they had a build for Jinder versus Brock. And I could see this being Jinder's moment to come in and be like, you know, establish his threat level to Brock, be like, I'm not in this match, but like, you still need to look out for me. Something like that.
The title change from last week was a legitimate shock to people. And I think we don't know if it was something planned storyline wise, or if it is a reaction to the low ticket sales of the Indian tour that they're about to do. They had to cancel one of the two nights.
I'm going to be 100% honest. I think that is 100% a reaction to ticket sales.
Yeah.
There is no way they planned that.
I think we'll know for sure tonight, or not tonight, tomorrow night. Tonight, if you're listening to this when we release it, we'll know for sure, depending on if Jinder shows up in this match. I think if he's not in there, then they really... it was a reactionary moment.
It was a reactionary thing. And honestly, I think if we don't see his face like on the card at in any aspect, I don't know. Yeah. I could see him very easily disappearing in the mid card somewhere and goodbye Jinder.
I would literally, if that's the case, I would literally not show him again till the Royal Rumble and use him as a Royal Rumble surprise entrant.
Something like that. I mean,
yeah,
he's... Honestly,
he's
he's such a special case. I think Jinder's run, his title run, has done wonders for him. Maybe not to the level that the writers like had hoped. I mean, he's not as over as, you know, AJ Styles or Brock Lesnar, but I mean, I think it's done wonders for him. And I think, you know, take him off TV for like a month, have him show up as a surprise entrant in the Rumble, like one of the later numbers, like... People are going to see him at first and they'll be like, oh, it's Jinder Mahal. But then it may slowly get the wheels turning and being like, wait, this guy just had like a 6-month title reign. Like, why couldn't he win the Rumble? You know what I mean? Like, he could,
him being
he could
number
totally
30
be a,
would be great.
Yeah. It could be very interesting, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. I guess we'll see for that. Just when it comes down to it, I mean, who do you see going over in this match?
I see Brock Lesnar winning, if only for the reason that Brock Lesnar as a character can't afford to lose very often, and AJ Styles could lose any night, and it's not really going to hurt his stock. This is what you were alluding to earlier, to surprise dream matches, and this is one that I think fits that category. It's two people who have been popular for a long time but have never crossed paths. It's a match we didn't think we were going to get. And very suddenly we have it. And I think that it, in contrast to the main event we talked about earlier, I don't think there are a bunch of future storylines for them to weave here. I think this might really be a one-off. I'm kind of hoping it is, because then I think the chances of it getting more than 5 minutes and being more like an actual match are probably greater. Yeah. I think this could sneaky be like a fantastic match if Brock Lesnar wants it to be.
I have high hopes for it, and I think he's going to – I think he might. I think Brock has got to see the value in AJ Styles as an opponent, so I think he's going to definitely try much harder than maybe he did with, you know, the Strowman match or maybe even the Samoa Joe match, but that was a really good match to begin with.
Yeah, so. I enjoyed that, but this is a different story where, like, Samoa Joe trying to conquer this monster is a way to think about it. It was like, well, I am – more powerful than anyone. I can even beat up this monster. Where I am really excited to see AJ being like, I'm going to run around this monster. It's like in Star Wars. It's like when Luke gets in his, not his X-Wing, whatever his snow cruiser is, and goes around the big
Around the AT-AT and wraps the legs.
That's kind of what I want to see. I want to see the first few minutes. AJ getting out of the ring, running around and getting back in and trying to literally tire him out.
Side note, are you a Game of Thrones fan?
I am not. You make the reference and I will shake my head.
Okay,
nodding.
I was going to make a reference. This is a season 4 reference, so it's a little bit of a spoiler. But anyway, there's these two characters in Game of Thrones. This is explanations for Andrew more than the people listening.
That's okay. You can tell it. I'm one of the few people who doesn't watch it. So
yeah, there's a fight, if you will, at the end of season 4 between this guy called the Mountain. And
I actually know this. So you can't even talk about it.
That itself explains it. He's about 7 foot something or other, about 400 some pounds, facing this guy Oberyn Martell. Not as small as AJ Styles, but a much smaller guy. And I mean, it's kind of the same setup as that. Like, you have this much more physically just bigger, stronger guy versus this tiny little dude who you wouldn't expect to be better, but because of his speed, because of his skill and his technicality, he puts up a hell of a fight. So I think that's what we're going to see here. I think AJ is literally going to run circles around Brock. Yeah. He's going to take him out at the legs, AT-AT style. Mm-hmm. And
to give you yet another Star Wars reference, this will be like in Jedi, where Luke versus the Rancor, and Brock is the Rancor, AJ is Luke, and Paul Heyman is Jabba the Hutt.
If you can if you can keep the Star Wars references coming, like...
Yeah, I'll try.
Perfect.
I think this is the last thing I'll say about this match before we move on, is whereas the rest of this show really is like a meaty mid-season episode where it's like, we got to try and tell 30 stories simultaneously, and the joy will be seeing how they pull it off. I think this match actually will be a simple story told well. It will be a brush, if not a brush, it will be a moment of fresh air in the middle of an otherwise really complex show.
Yeah. Well, so, speaking of complex, we're gonna transition from that to the next Survivor Series elimination match. This one is going to be the Raw women's roster versus the SmackDown women's roster. Same rules, same idea as the first one. You have five superstars on each team representing each of their brands, elimination style, last one standing wins. Now this match, it's going to have a few different things going into it in terms of the superstars that are into it, the storylines they're running, and what that means. And I think the biggest one is obviously Team Raw. They do already have a pretty good established group of women on there. But I think the biggest name is definitely Asuka.
Yes. Recently Asuka, debuted undefeated Asuka.
Undefeated Asuka. And that's the main point here. She has never lost a match. Now, granted, yes, this is a 5-on-5 elimination style match. I can't possibly see Asuka getting pinned or submitting to anyone. Mm-hmm. So right there, you're already giving Team Raw a leg up in that the only way you're going to get rid of Asuka is in a disqualification or a count out, something along those lines.
Which those happen much more often in Survivor Series than any other time of the year.
True.
Yeah. I think...
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess if you think about it, if you actually had to see 10 pinfalls or submission, that could take a little bit.
Yeah, people are going to be pinned without much offense in a Survivor Series match. I kind of think with the other surprise title victory last week of Charlotte Flair winning the title and now Natalya's in this match instead, I kind of fear that this match is actually going to be very, very short. I think the only way SmackDown wins is if Asuka gets disqualified somehow. I would be willing to bet money on SmackDown somehow eliminating everyone from Raw pretty quickly. Maybe Sasha and Bayley get in a fight and DQ each other. Maybe Nia Jax. Maybe all three of them get in a fight, right? I think you're going to see a position where there are heavy odds stacked against Asuka, and then she systematically eliminates people one by one.
Which
I think, that, yeah.
Honestly, I would love to see that. I think that would be the best way to really build her back up as this incredible threat in the women's division. Yeah. Have SmackDown go like 4-1 on Team Raw. Take everyone out. It's four women against Asuka, and have her just take them out systematically, one by one by one. I think that would be incredible.
Yeah. And I think it's even more likely without Charlotte Flair in there that now looking at the SmackDown roster, it's a lot of people who you can afford to have get destroyed. Not to devalue them at all, but I think that like it doesn't hurt them as much. And you're right. I think the main story of this match is going to be Asuka is an unstoppable force. And what's going to be interesting is how they choose to carry that out. The other thing people think might happen in here is maybe a cash-in. What do you think the odds are of that happening? To explain, Carmella on the SmackDown team has a briefcase that allows her to get a shot at the women's title at any point. I guess well, now that, that the women's title is not in this match, actually, it doesn't help that at all. In,
we could see that cash-in coming in the next match, though, which is the Raw Women's Champion, Alexa Bliss, taking on the newly crowned SmackDown Women's Champion, Charlotte Flair.
Oh, what a segue, Tyler. That was amazing.
What a segue. I know, I know. It's
quick,
professional
Tyler,
level
explain
right
to
here.
People why this title change happened.
Okay, so... Oh, well, I mean, honestly, there's several factors leading up to the Survivor Series card. Again, they've changed the card very drastically in a very short amount of time. Leading
it
up,
it didn't
to this,
even
the...
take months happening to do it this time. Like...
I know. The women's champion was Natalia. She was holding, God, I don't know how long she held the title for. It
not that long.
A few months, I think, at most.
Months, yeah.
But I think it was a combination of... Charlotte Flair, the daughter of two-time WWE Hall of Famer Ric Flair, he did just have his ESPN special 30 for 30 released, which I haven't seen it yet. I really want to see it. I don't have ESPN, so I'm,
nor have I, and I own most of the 30 for 30s.
I am missing out, I digress. But yeah, so his special did release on ESPN to a lot of... praise, not just within the wrestling community, of course, but sports community and really just the media in general. People,
yeah,
don't
it's got a lot
wrestling.
Of press out of this.
Exactly, a lot of press, and so I think that definitely played into the writing. I think the writers saw that they could capitalize on this kind of nationwide press that Ric Flair is getting right now by putting the title on his daughter
and putting Ric Flair back on TV.
Putting him back on TV, have him make a little cameo. It's going to put some more eyes on the product. So I think that was the right decision, but also purely just within the storyline, I think Charlotte is already a much more she's already higher on the pecking order, I think, than Natalya is, and I think by making Charlotte your champion versus Alexa Bliss, it gives it a little more evened out in that match, because I think when it was Alexa versus Natalya, I think everyone was pretty sure that Alexa was easily going to win that match. Not easily, but she was definitely going to win. But now
it would have been a heel
balanced.
Versus heel, bad guy versus bad guy story, which is a tough story to tell in wrestling in just storytelling convention in general. It's harder to have someone to care about that way.
And knowing how WWE does things historically, they really don't like to do the heel versus heel matches. They much prefer to have an established good guy and a bad guy, so you know who you're supposed to cheer for, who you're not.
There's another factor, I think, another business factor, I think, that led to this match happening and the title switch, and it's the upcoming WWE special of their version of Starrcade, which was a pay-per-view from WCW back in the day that was a pay-per-view that was usually... prominently featuring Ric Flair. They're going to try and run their version of it, and it's going to be a nostalgia act. And the other person who was really involved was Dusty Rhodes. His son, they don't have employed anymore, and his other son that they do have employed has not been featured prominently in a long time. So I think they're like, well, this is the only way that we get that kind of nostalgia tie-in, so we gotta make Charlotte the main focus of it. I think she probably will be the main event of whatever Starrcade ends up being.
Yeah, I could
that
see
would be
that.
My guess.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think it's gonna be a good match either way. But the whole point that I'm sorry that we segued to this was the possibility of a cash-in.
Yes. Yes, you're right.
Got to bring it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Money in the Bank briefcase, do you think we should give it a little synopsis here? Or?
Yeah, we said, you know, Carmella won it. It allows her within the calendar year to get a title shot at any time, even if it's right after another match has happened.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of like the main point with the Money in the Bank is that it can happen at any time. And so a lot of people speculate we could definitely see a Money in the Bank cash in here after this match. Honestly, what I've heard and what I think would definitely be the best storyline here, Alexa Bliss is the Raw champion, Charlotte Flair is SmackDown champion, Carmella is on the SmackDown roster. Now, the thing with the Money in the Bank briefcase is she can cash in for any championship she wants. She doesn't have to face Charlotte, the champion who is on the same brand as her. She could easily challenge Alexa Bliss, make the jump over to Raw. I could see this happening because then you have Carmella holding the Raw championship, and that it almost makes her an easy target for then Asuka to take her out and become the Raw champion, because they may be trying to protect Alexa Bliss a little more than that. Alexa Bliss is definitely much more over than Carmella is at the moment, so I could see them not wanting to have Asuka come in and just absolutely destroy her.
Yeah, I think if this match goes on first, which I think it's a contender to do, if this goes on first, then I don't think we see the cash in. If it goes on first, then I think it's WWE saying we feel that the two of you are good enough wrestlers that without much storyline and without much story to tell, that you guys can go on and just put on an entertaining athletic match. So if this is the first, if you hear Alexa Bliss's music to start off the show, then you're probably not getting a cash in, would be my guess.
Honestly, though, I'm going to say just purely off that, that'd be a great start to the show, man. She always gets a really good pop. Like
That would. I think if they get this match like 10 minutes, this could be a really entertaining
match. It could be a great match, yeah.
Skipping to another match. Now I'm torn.
Like, do I want them to give him like 6 or 7 minutes of a meh match, have Carmella cash in, or do I want them to just give him a 10, 15 minutes, have a great match, and then go on?
I think another reason that maybe that might happen is if they are thinking this is a potential WrestleMania match, then they're going to test it out here, see how people respond, and then run it back at WrestleMania. Maybe. But another match that might be the opener of the show to open strong, this is one I'm very excited for, is The Shield versus The New Day.
You think that could be the opener?
I think so, because it's definitely a match that feels like it should go on last, but there's already two matches that like should go on last before it, so you might as well space it out.
Yeah, this match is easily a main event on any card. I would argue
this could be a WrestleMania main event.
Yeah, absolutely. Two of the biggest factions easily in the past 10 years. The New Day versus The Shield. This is a huge match just because this is finally we're going to have the official reunion of The Shield. They had built the story up for a while, and we were supposed to have it back at TLC?
Yeah, TLC. And then at SummerSlam. At SummerSlam, at TLC.
At TLC. Yeah. And then
the mumps happened.
We had the mumps. Mumps out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then that got delayed. They had to replace Roman with Kurt Angle, of course, which was, I mean, that was a great little fan service right there. But this is finally, we're going to have the official reunion of The Shield, the three original members, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, taking on the New Day, Kofi Kingston, Big E, and Xavier Woods. So, I mean, I'm definitely pumped for this match. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah. I think the other reason I think this might start off the show is that this match hasn't got the build that it probably should, just because of Roman Reigns having the mumps and having to come back late. So I could see the show opening with the New Day coming out and doing a long promo, having the Shield come out and promo back. You got six, maybe five. You got five of the better talkers in wrestling right now out there together. This is really fun because this match can be both a comedy match, it could be silly and goofy and fun, or this could be a real like barn burner athletic showdown. It could be both.
I'm leaning towards the latter. The New Day is obviously your comedy specialists in the WWE right now, but I don't see them writing The Shield that way.
No,
specifically that, you know, where they're on the road to Roman right now. It's trying to build him up for WrestleMania.
In the words of Vince McMahon to CM Punk, make Roman look strong. I think that's going to be the story of this match.
So I don't
see the New Day winning in any way.
Oh no, yeah, absolutely not. But I definitely, I don't see the Shield really doing much comedy in this match. I think it's going to be a great match. I mean, we know that obviously the Shield can put on an amazing match. We know that the New Day can put on a great match, as they have with the Usos for the past couple months. So I think we're in store for possibly just a really great match between these two teams.
Mm-hmm. We've got 4 minutes left, and I think we have three more matches.
Well, I'm going to say two, because there's one that... There's a pre-show match. I really just could not care for.
About Amore Kalisto?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Pre-show, another run back of a match we saw last pay-per-view that was not particularly good. I'm hoping for some chicanery in that, some shenanigans, hopefully a Drew Gulak sighting or something. But that's really all we should talk about that match for, right? Maybe Neville will come back. That would be because apparently he's patched everything up and will be back out there.
Save it. But the next match, well, honestly, this is the one that I see opening the show, is going to be Cesaro and Sheamus, Fibar versus Fibar. The Usos. SmackDown.
Why are they named The Bar, Tyler?
Fibar?
Why are they named The Bar? Yeah. Do you actually know this? I learned this week.
I think it was something along the lines of we don't set the bar, we are the bar, or something like that.
Yeah, I heard that maybe backstage they became the bar because in storyline they became friends finally over a drink at a bar.
Oh, okay.
So that is why they are the bar. But the bar versus the Usos. Yeah,
I'll take it. But yeah, so the Usos SmackDown Tag Team Champions, Fibar is the Raw Tag Team Champions. I think this will probably open the show, because I could see this match like stealing the show.
Yeah, for the same reason that we said that Alexa and Charlotte might open the show, it would also apply here.
We know that the Usos can put on a hell of a match. They have with the New Day the past couple months. We know Cesaro and Sheamus can put on a hell of a match. They're just, I mean, great competitors. They have amazing chemistry as a tag team, as they've shown us lately. So I think this match could steal the show. So I'm really excited for this one. Yeah.
This is like the mechanic special. A mechanic in wrestling is someone who maybe isn't the biggest star, but who you know is going to put on a good match with anybody. So if you put four mechanics together, you're going to have a car, I guess. Mm-hmm. That was a weird metaphor at the end, but we got there. So yeah, this will be fun no matter what.
That's a t-shirt right there, man.
Yeah, that's a t-shirt.
First t-shirt design is put
the
four
last
mechanics
match
together,
we got.
You got a car.
Just for the sake of time, because we're under 2 minutes, is Miz versus Baron Corbin, Intercontinental Champion versus U.S. Champion. This is, as we referred to earlier, a dreaded heel versus heel match.
It is. So I don't think they're very excited for it. I'm not sure even what they're going to do in terms of storyline. I could easily see the Miztourage showing up. But I don't know. Who do you see winning is the better question.
Not the fans. I'm trying to stay positive on this. I really like The Miz a lot, and he's also one of the most reliable people on the roster. But I think, to no deterrent of either of them, I think because it's a heel versus heel, and because it's in the middle of this card, that there's really reasons to watch every other match. I think this will be the de facto P-break match.
I could see this just being a count-out DQ or something like that. No definitive winner,
This could be between whichever goes on last between AJ Brock and the Team Raw versus SmackDown. This might be in between to cool everybody off.
Yeah. This is going to be the go buy some merch match.
So we're about to run out. There's one more thing I want to talk about really quickly. So there has been some talk through other wrestling avenues that because of the popularity of the Bullet Club and their shirts recently, that the WWE is trying to quickly put together a new world order so that they can get people wearing those shirts again instead.
Faction
and try
against
to, like,
faction, I see.
Yeah. And I've heard a lot of people talking about, like, well, if you're going to redo the new world order, you have to have a big face who's going to turn like Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think this could finally be the John Cena heel turn?
I mean, how excited would you be if suddenly as we referred to them earlier in this episode, the Outsiders, Sammy and Kevin, come to cause havoc in the match, go against Team SmackDown, and then savior of SmackDown,
John Cena,
finally turns heel.
Oh, man. Ugh. I'm like super pumped for this now, actually.
Then you could finally see if new world order. Then I think you could see a perceived John Cena versus Roman Reigns WrestleMania main event that people would care about.
Yeah, I mean, that would be amazing.
Chances of this happening is like 1%.
I know. Yeah, very slim. I definitely love the idea of that. Biggest problem with that is that Roman is already saved for Brock, so that's not going to happen. But, oh, man, I really enjoy that idea of, like, having... See, I think it would be something they would have to build to, though. You can't just have it all culminate with just the Survivor Series, because we still don't officially have, like, KO and Sammy, like, turning against SmackDown. Like, they're hinting at it, but we don't really have it. So,
well, you have it in reality reporting with them being sent home from the tour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which I have kind of felt is a work.
It's so hard to tell these days.
Yeah.
I don't know.
If this actually happens, then I will put it in the episode.
Yeah, that's
show how smart
story.
We were. Yeah.
But no, I mean, I don't know. That's a good one. I could see KO and Sammy like turning on them at Survivor Series, and then you can build that. You can have them like facing
There's
off against Orton
man.
Or Cena in the following weeks, and then like come Rumble or something, have the reveal of like the third member as they do. Like that could be really good.
Yeah. But our time has run out. I think we did a pretty good job of preparing it. I'm really excited for it now. If you're not doing any... Well, no, never mind. This is going to come out on Sunday. I won't talk about NXT at all. So I'm going to say this again. We're really excited. Our time has run out. We hope that you watch Survivor Series with us. We also hope that you subscribe to the podcast, which is now on iTunes, Much Ado About Wrestling. If you go to muchadowrestling.com, that is our website. We got a Twitter, we got a Facebook that will all be in there.
Yep, we're going to be hopefully watching Survivor Series live. I'm going to be trying to do some live tweeting on it, so please.
How many tweets have you ever done in your life, Tyler?
Oh man. Honestly,
zero?
Not one. I literally haven't. I don't have a Twitter. I don't know how I run it. My girlfriend's going to help me. She's going to show me how to do this because I don't understand Twitter. But I'm going to be attempting to live tweet during Survivor Series. Please, I guess, comment, hashtag. I'm not sure how it works.
Follow along.
Join in on the
Tyler
conversation.
Try to
watch
figure
it
out. At Ado Wrestling. I also say that on our website, go to the contact page and leave us some questions that you want to hear us answer in kayfabe for the big segment, the Kayfabe Machine, on our soon-to-come, hard-launched regular podcast episode.
We welcome any and all questions, please. Anything you want to put on there, we'd appreciate.
Yeah, it would be fantastic. We'll give you a shout-out as well. So that's all we got for you right now. Please go watch along with us. And in the immortal words of William Shakespeare, if wrestling be the food of love, play on.